You're here tonight and you've lied, cheated. You're immoral. You're homosexual. You're an adulterer. Or you just hate your mother. Or your wife's mother. You don't have to be good. God says, good or bad, come to the wedding. Come to the wedding supper. And says the wedding was furnished with guests. You doggone rights. It's a dinky little country. What happened in two verses above this? The king killed a bunch of people. You know, you got to be stupid. You don't have to be good. You don't have to be very smart to have heard that in this little dinky country, you know, darling, word gets around that the king sent out a bunch of invitations, let everybody know way in advance, and when it was time for the supper, the people wouldn't go, and he killed them. And now someone comes up and says, I'd like for you to come. I'll be there. Subham, do you see that a lot of people would come without changed hearts? There is a certain amount of pressure to come. Now, you know this pressure. All of you know it. When you were lost, and some of you still are lost, you've been in church, and you've heard those preachers preach hellfire damnation. That's pretty inducive to come. And you'll come. You'll come join the church. You'll come take your little catechism. You'll come go through your little confirmation. You'll do your due to make peace with somebody about something. So yes, it wouldn't be difficult to get a crowd after the king has destroyed a bunch of people. And a lot of bad people would come. And churches are full of this, even today. People that are members, but there's no rebirth. They profess, but there's no possession. Now, before I go on with this parable, I want to tell you this parable has several applications. One is a historical application. This really happened historically. And part of it has not yet happened historically. It's going to happen in the future. Then there's dispensational truth. Now, I want to just say this briefly in passing about the dispensational truth of this. Dispensationally speaking, the end of the parable has not yet happened. The part that we're coming to. Dispensationally, let me remind you that you and I are not the guest of a wedding supper. We're the bride. Let's get that straight. We are the bride that the king intends to honor, the bride of Christ. We're not the guest. Dispensationally, the guest at the wedding, where this fits, is these are the flesh and blood people that have survived the great tribulation. The wedding takes place in heaven, privately, in the Father's house. And then everyone comes down to earth for the wedding feast, the wedding supper. The guests at the wedding, the friends of the bridegroom, in other parables, are not angels. They are people, flesh and blood people, the same ones that survived the Great Tribulation and are going to enter the millennium as flesh and blood people. Now you'll recall that as soon as Jesus gets here, in the teachings we've had in the past on Revelation, one of the first things he does is he sets up his throne in Matthew and 25 and separates the sheep from the goats. Because you see, when the Battle of Armageddon, all the wicked soldiers in the world that are fighting at the Battle of Armageddon are killed. But the question is, don't you understand? And the problem is that millions of people did not fight at Armageddon. Millions of lost people are mothers, secretaries, 18-year-olds, 64-year-olds, 82-year-olds, all over the world that didn't fight. But they're lost. And now the king comes to establish the kingdom. And the scriptures are very clear that when the king comes and establishes the kingdom, all that offend, Matthew 13, 41, are gathered and slain. There is a separation when the king comes so that when the kingdom is established in its fullness, there is not one lost person left on the planet. Everybody is born again that enters that kingdom. The problem is they start having babies. And the babies have to be born again just like everybody else. They have to make the same decision Abraham made. So I want you to understand that what we're seeing here is a similar situation to the separation of sheep and goat. that the sheep are saved people, flesh and blooders, and they're going to come to the wedding supper as friends of the bridegroom and rejoice. We're going to have glorified bodies. They won't. And we're having a blast. And they're enjoying it. You know why? They know they're going to get what we've got. And they've never seen one of those glorified things. Just shining, reflecting the radiance of God, glowing with the goodness of God. So, dispensationally, that's where we are in this thing. But there's a practical side of it too. Now, up till now, here's what we've learned. First, authority. We've seen the response of the king to the rejection of, number one, his servants and their message. We saw his response. You wonder, what's the king going to do? We found out. He sent his army and destroyed them. And he's going to do it again at Armageddon. Titus was a sneak preview of coming attractions. Number two, we've seen the response of the king to the rejection of his son, whom they dishonor. Because the marriage supper was for the purpose of honoring him. And number three, we've seen the response of the king in that by dishonoring his servants and his son, they dishonor the king and incur his wrath. All right? So we've seen great patience and grace back in verse 4. Look at verse 4. Again, he sent forth his servants. But this patience and grace refused brings forth wrath from God, from the king. And that's verse 7. So all hear and be made wise. God's patience and grace refused always incurs his wrath. Our problem is, when the wrath doesn't fall as soon as we do it, we think it ain't going to happen. See, man judges God. No matter what God does, we decide he's not right. If the moment we sin, God punishes us, we say, God didn't have any patience. Well, goodness gracious, I've got more patience than God. I mean, if he'd have just given me a little time, I would have seen the error of my way, and I would have straightened up and repented. So see, we judge God. When God brings punishment immediately, we judge God wasn't fair, too harsh, too strict. So then God is patient. And when God is patient, we misunderstand that and say, looky there, I sinned, I robbed a bank, I fornicated, I lied, cheated, stole, I did it, and I didn't, nothing happened, the police didn't get me, I didn't drop dead of a heart attack, my leg didn't fall off. Conclusion, ain't no God. I can get by with this forever. There is no day of reckoning. So that no matter what God does, the fallen nature of man judges him and finds God to be lacking. Put it another way, God just doesn't have a chance with our intellect as long as the fallen nature is judging God. Larry, we always find him to be doing it wrong. Moreover, have any of you noticed that about yourselves? Some of you want husbands, and it hadn't happened fast enough. God blew it, didn't he? God's making a mistake. You've been praying. You just know that's right. How about a job? Some of you need jobs. Been praying for a job. Nothing good has happened. God's blown it, hadn't he? Well, he's doing pretty good in most people's lives, you know, since they're not doing so good. Hallelujah. You know, they deserve to suffer. But me, I deserve good things. And God's blowing it. Do you see what I mean? When we decide that things aren't happening right in our life, the way it ought to be going, what we're really doing is judging God and deciding he's blowing it. Verse 11 is devastating. When the king came in to see the guest, he saw there a man who had not on a wedding garment. Now I need to tell you about that. See, the invitation has been sent out. And when they go out in highways to invite the people in, once again, it's the same thing. They let them know when the wedding feast will be. A date is given. And it's up to the king at all these kind of feasts. Because see, when you're going to honor your son, you don't want anyone to feel bad. We want everyone to enjoy themselves. We want it to be a wonderful, sumptuous affair. And since we're going out especially into the highways, it's understood that some people might be embarrassed. I mean, here's a poor man, and here's a sumptuous affair at the king's palace. So to make sure that no one felt unworthy, to make sure that there was no social distinction between the rich and the poor, to make sure that you couldn't offer up an excuse, I don't have a new dress, the king always furnished. It was his job. It was his duty